In the name of the living God, creating, redeeming, and sustaining. Amen. How many of you have an Amazon Alexa in your home? Okay, some do and some don't. If you don't know what an Alexa is, it's a speaker that will respond to your questions and your commands. So you can say, Alexa, what's the weather today? I'm hoping there's not one in here. It'll start talking to us. It'll give us a full report via the AI technology that it accesses on the internet. So my children go down rabbit holes on Alexa all the time. Alexa, who is the most famous person of all time? Alexa, what's the world record for the person who stood on one foot the longest? They even tried to trick Alexa and ask things like, Alexa, how old is Olivia English? That's my daughter's name. And of course, Alexa, in her knowledge base, only knows the age of some more searchable Olivia Englishes, and so would reply, Olivia English is 86 years old. And they'd all fall apart laughing on the ground. I would fall apart laughing on the ground as well. So for a solid week several months ago, with my children were enthralled with asking, Alexa, who is the richest person in the world? And then, Alexa, who's the richest woman in the world? Alexa, how much money does the richest person in the world have? These questions gave us as parents an opportunity to talk about money and wealth. How does a person become the richest? As Christian believers, how are we called to view money? And my husband and I made a point of sharing how Jesus modeled his own life, not by holding on to things or even life itself as his own. So let's talk for a minute about where and in what context the gospel you just heard is taking place. We're with the Pharisees again in the temple, and again, like in the past weeks, the people in power in Jesus' world are putting him to the test. Now, these are the Pharisees, but there's a whole bigger context of political power happening here. The Roman Empire is where they're living and under the oppressive rule where they are. The vast majority of the people around them are worshiping Roman gods, not the one true God, who Jesus accesses as Father. Even worse, the emperor that kept being mentioned in the gospel today, Caesar Augustus, allowed himself to be worshiped as a living God. So when Jesus was alive, you can imagine he's going around as God himself. There was a simmering political resistance to the Roman Empire, not just among Jesus and his people, but all around. And by the time the Gospel of Matthew was written 30 years ago, after Christ's death and resurrection, there was a full-on revolt of the Jewish people against this Roman rule. And the people, most common people, I wish I had one. I have someone somewhere in like a box of souvenirs that I haven't unpacked since I moved here 5 years ago. But, because you can get pretend, not real ones, but replicas of the coins that people carried in their pockets. And they bore the head of the emperor what's his name again?
Caesar.
And Jesus, as a Jew, knew the Ten Commandments by heart. And one of the first parts of that law, of the Ten Commandments, was to not create any graven images. Yet, if the Jewish people wanted to exist in the society, they were forced to carry graven images of Caesar in their pockets. The denarius. The empire's common currency. Well, in the gospel today, with the Pharisees trying to put him to the test, Jesus asks them in the temple to produce the coin that breaks a commandment. And they do. Oh, they haven't exchanged it for the shekels of the temple. And Jesus says, whose head is this? And whose title? Now, a better translation, according to Greek scholars, is whose head is this? And whose likeness? In whose likeness? Those hearing Jesus' question would hearken back immediately to the first chapter of Genesis. Chapter 1, verse 26, where after creating all things, God says, let us create humankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, over all the creatures that move along the ground. In short, not only does everything belong to God, but we were created in God's likeness. This passage is particularly challenging for many because Jesus essentially implies it's not simply the buckets we make for God, like the church and religion that belong to God, but it's also the political and the secular realms. Even Caesar himself parading around as a god actually belongs to God. Note that Jesus doesn't strike down these Pharisees. He doesn't penalize the interrogators for breaking the commandment, carrying around the head of Caesar. Instead, he calls them to account. Give to God what is God's. And that means those who sought to trap Jesus have been called out and the truth has been revealed. The temple tax, the Roman tax, one's faith decisions, one's political decisions, they all belong to God. There was an inspiring obituary in the New York Times on October 9th by Robert McFadden about Charles Chuck Feeney. Have you heard of Chuck Feeney? You might have vaguely just because of what he did, but during most of his lifetime, people had no idea who this guy was, except for some certain philanthropists. Chuck made his fortune as the pioneer of duty-free shops and an investor in tech startups, and by the time he'd amassed a fortune, he was worth $8 billion. But it wasn't his life's wealth that gave him a headline in the New York Times obituaries. It was that he gave away almost all of it before he died. He put it really simply when he was alive. It's a lot more fun to give while you're alive than to give when you're dead. Among other offerings, Charles Feeney built over 1,000 buildings on five continents worth over $2.7 billion in his lifetime. And his name is not on one of them. In the end, Chuck had given away 375,000% of what he died with. He died with $2 million, which when you're looking at $8 billion, a very tiny piece of the pie. Give to the emperor what's the emperor's. Give to God what is God's. It's so easy to divide our life into buckets, right? My work things are over here. My family's over here. My church life's over here. Well, my life of prayer is over here. What if we started seeing all of it as belonging to God? I asked Alexa, Alexa, what does it mean to be rich? She replied, the adjective rich has the following meanings. One, having wealth or great possessions or valuable resources. Two, abounding in natural resources. Three, having wealth or valuable resources. Four, abounding. I like that last definition. Simply abounding. Chuck Feeney, I think, understood that definition too. So did Jesus. The Apostle Paul understood it like this: as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, as poor, yet making many rich, as having nothing, yet possessing all things. The prophet Isaiah understood it like this: I will give you the treasures of darkness and riches hidden in secret places, so that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who call you by your name. Jesus encountered those men in the temple in the gospel this morning, and instead of falling into their trap of defining things in limited terms, he stunned them into seeing it all on God's terms. As David Loos so aptly writes, perhaps the charge against those trying to entrap or discount Jesus is then or now best understood as amnesia. For they have forgotten who they are, in whose likeness they were made. My friends, being made in the likeness of God is our primary identity. And that charges us to act like Jesus. Figuring out how to do that is a lifelong pursuit. It requires coming back again and again to the table where we remember who and whose we are. And it requires not only remembering, but being remembered to one another and to God. So we're in that season where we're preparing to make our 2024 pledge of time, talent, and treasure. We do that here as an ingathering on November 5th. And then we're preparing as citizens, those of us who are old enough to vote on November 7th. So I invite us all into the spiritual practice of seeing all of it as everything as belonging to God. And whatever stances you have on giving, money, life in the church, whatever stances politically you hold, the truth is that Christians of good faith can still have different approaches and even disagree on the best way to live into them and still further God's kingdom on earth. So may we each reflect the likeness of God wherever we go, whatever we do, in the days to come. Amen.